Hey guys, as always, we'd like to have you check us out on The Valley Outdoors. Where else, Don?
On The Valley Outdoors Facebook.
Yeah.
Well, I usually get to do the website. You usually do Facebook.
I know, I switch it up on
you
him.
Switch it up.
He totally got stuck for a second.
No, I wasn't stuck.
I turned and went, I'm just going to surprise
him. I got confused.
Yeah, go to thevalleyoutdoors.com and check out the Facebook page, too.
See, you had to say it, didn't you?
Yeah.
Oh, Don, I tell you. I'm looking forward to going fishing. You know where I'm going?
Where are you going?
Lake of the Woods.
Lake of the Woods. When are you going?
Tomorrow morning.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah. Fine. 5 a.m., 5 days.
Are you taking the long haul across the big puddle?
Going across the big pond. You always give me crap about that. And of course,
I
don't care myself because we're driving I'm in the Vexus. The funny part about the story is because all the history in the past years having, whether different boat brands, Rangers and whatever, all the guys that have gone or that are going on the trip have all my past boats. So guess who gets to do all the maintenance on anything that's gone wrong for the past 3 years if I haven't been around them?
Well, of course, you.
Me.
You sold them the lemon.
No, it's no lemon.
Well, then why is there maintenance?
Huh?
Why is there maintenance?
Because every boat needs some type of maintenance or they've done nothing to it. Or...
I just came back from one and I noticed my trim tabs missing on my motor.
Oh, that fell out?
Somehow.
You weren't paying attention.
Wow, how do you see that one?
Well, I'd be surprised if your prop's not dinged. When those come out, your prop usually will smack it pretty heavy.
Yeah, it might have a nick in it.
I had that happen. We're doing a dealer meeting down in Arkansas 1 year, and I couldn't for the life of me figure out why my prop had this ginormous dent in all three blades. And then I found out why.
Oh, yeah.
That the flat plate dropped down, prop rotated into it.
Yeah,
and
sure.
That stainless got smacked. It was lucky it didn't break anything else. But... Yeah, I'm looking forward to going up to Lake of the Woods. It should be a really good time. The fun part about it is it's competitive between boats just as a fun competitive.
How many are going?
Eight.
Eight boats?
Eight
anglers.
Eight guys.
Okay.
So four boats.
Four boats.
And I'm a jigging fan. Jigging is my deal. There's nothing better than jig fishing.
Yeah.
And when... You can go up and I can do my favorite. And then I start throwing some big plastics on. And the other guys are looking at me like, what are you going to do with that thing? And then I start hooking big fish.
Yeah.
They're like, you got any extra? Well,
no.
How many bait shops are close by? None, right? It's going to cost you. It's amazing how much you can get for one plastic minnow. So that's going to be fun, but I really look forward to that. In the past years, the part that's been a bummer is the weather, believe it or not, has been less than optimal on the way back. And one of the guys had a bilge pump that went out, didn't know it, auto bilge.
Oh, yeah.
And all of a sudden, the motor ingested water. He had four guys in the boat. So it was my old boat, so I jumped in quick and looked around what was going on. And sure enough, there was water in the boat. And I said, put that other bilge pump on because the one was just trickling out. Apparently, it was clogged with debris.
Yep.
And the other one, we got that going. And I jumped in, and we finally got the motor going and blew the water out. Luckily, it wasn't to the point of a complete hydro, but the waves were not. It was that normal 13 to 14 mile an hour trip.
Right.
You know. So.
Well, I mean, the reason I always say that going across the big puddle is I've got caught out there in 40 mile an hour winds and. And that gives you a new respect for big water.
It does, I think.
I watch the weather really close before I head out on it.
Usually in the mornings when we leave and come back, it's not bad. You get out in the morning. If you wait till later in the afternoon, evening, the wind usually gets to the point where it's not good.
Well, that's what I'm saying. Is if you take off, typically it's pretty calm early morning.
That's what we always come back.
Yeah.
But heading into Vexus... That's a whole different ride. I'm not going to lie. You don't spear waves like the other boats do. it just surprises me how different a ride can be. I never thought it could be that different with the hull design change. So really pretty cool.
Well, you have fun.
I'm going to do that. We'll have a fun
report. We'll expect big, big fish stories next week.
Oh, yeah. Well, I don't know about big ones, but we'll have a lot. That's going to be fun. I'm not going for the big fish.
It's really dangerous to say, you know.
What?
We're going to have lots.
It's not a big deal. I'm not worried about that. We just don't go for the big ones because the big ones are, you know, you can get them, but it's not like you're going to target them.
Right.
And then we like to eat fish, so it's a good thing. Speaking of a not a good thing, you guys are, I don't know how to take the story. Don and I, we chatted about this off air, but a cruise line apologizes for distress, in parentheses, after passengers witness a whale hunt. A whale hunt near the Faroe Islands left passengers in the cruise line in distress as they watched dozens of pilot whales in a whale hunt that were being harvested. Ambassador Cruise Line apologized to the customers following the July 9th hunt when locals harvested 78 pilot whales, members of the dolphin family. The company issued a statement via Twitter in which it condemned the hunt and apologized to all the passengers aboard the ship at the time. We strongly object to this outdated practice and have been working with our partner, Orca, ORCA, a charity dedicated to studying and protecting whales, dolphins, and porpoises in the UK and European waters, to encourage change since 2021, the ambassador wrote, stressing its commitment to sustainability as a core value. We fully appreciate that witnessing this local event would have been distressing for the majority of guests on board, the company added. Accordingly, we would like to sincerely apologize to them for anyone that's unduly upset. The ambassador reiterated the company's commitment to protecting whales and dolphins and highlighted the effort to educate our guests and crew not to buy or eat any whale or dolphin meat to avoid contributing to the continued commercial whaling industry around the world. Now, the hunt, known as the Grindadrop, also called the grind, which translates to whale harvest, happens regularly throughout the year, according to Newsweek. The locals herd a large pod of whale into shallower waters where they harvest them with knives and hooks in a traditional manner. Traditional manner.
Yeah, well, either way, it's a tradition.
Yeah, so let me continue here and we'll get that. Review of the hunt found the residents had done X number, responded placing a limit of 500 on the specific breed. The Faroese government insists, the website, that the practice is deemed sustainable, requiring all hunters to carry a license and only hunt in designated areas, and notes that the total population in that region is 778,000 of these whales, and that only 100,000 of them come near the Faroe Islands, and in which they can only kill a small portion of that. While the whaling in the Faroe Islands has been regulated for centuries, the law explicitly states that the hunt is to be conducted in such a way as to cause the least suffering for the whales. Government stressed that the killing is not commercial, and anything is caught is distributed for free to the local community where the hunt happens as part of a traditional community-based sharing, with whale meat and blubber occasionally available for sale and some of the supermarkets there and on the dockside. I'm sorry, Don, I agree with you. If you're going to plan a trip via, you know, if the cruise line plans a trip, somebody didn't do their research.
Well, I would say if I was on a cruise ship and I witnessed something of that nature, and it's a tradition that they've been doing for centuries.
Yep.
I would ask for a refund, as I didn't see that on the itinerary when I signed up for the cruise.
Yep.
There's a big ocean out there that they could have gone to
somewhere
another
else
port
if you're offended by it.
If you're offended by it. So I don't know about the, if there's any harm to the environment doing this or not, but if it's a tradition, it's their tradition. And like you said, there's 100,000, they only took 70.
Yes. It's
you got to believe that many.
Not very many.
A lot more than that just die naturally every year. So.
Yeah. Well, and again, it's one of those things, a tradition. So that's kind of the element behind it. So we'll tell you what, we're going to take a break. We'll be back. And we're going to talk about the new action called for and the Minnesota DNR looking to update the invasive perch plan. Stay tuned for that.
Does your family need a break from the daily routine?
Hello, I'm Dr. Spruce. If you or someone you know needs a healthy dose of nature, visit discovertheforest.org and trade in the big screen for the big blue sky by visiting a local park or forest near you.
Hiking, picnicking, swimming, orienteering, climbing, admiring wildlife, or inhaling fresh air may result in heightened creativity, feelings of joy, harmony, satisfaction, and a euphoria that can only be explained as oneness with the natural world. Whoa.
Well, Don, have you ever read stories about snakes or spiders and that kind of gives you the heebie-jeebies?
No.
You ever done that, Ava? It's like you read a story
Yeah.
or...
all the time.
Okay. You ever heard a story about or seen somebody that pulls a tick off and you've been in the same area and all of a sudden you're...
Yes.
You're
itchy.
You're like,
oh, I feel
wait a minute, I think I got a tick.
Yep.
Okay. So everybody gets done with this one. I think you're going to be looking for ticks.
In all the wrong places?
No, I didn't say that. You did. Research now shows ticks could spread CWD in the deer population. Heather Inzalco was a lead researcher for a project that looked at whether ticks could carry the spread of CWD to other deer. University of Wisconsin-Madison researcher discovered the ticks could host CWD and spread the virus or prions, now that's the big thing that creates the spreading, to other whitetails, if the deer ate the ticks off the white-tailed deer.
Not if they're bit by another one, huh?
No.
Only if they consume.
Well, stay tuned. All right. Research concluded that prions and ticks from three CWD-positive deer heads had infectious dose ranges from 0.3 to 42.4 per tick. That means that one tick in the study had about one-third of an infectious dose, while another tick had 42.4 times the infectious dose of CWD. She said the deer engaging in all grooming, which is a type of grooming between the same members of the species. During that, they're picking off ticks and parasites from one another, sometimes ingesting the ticks. That's where I was trying to figure out, so I had to read through the story. She said out of 2,000 deer heads that she viewed, 173 of them were infested with ticks. Out of 173, 15 of them tested positive for CWD. Of the 15, only 3 had prions in them. She collected from the ear of these CWD-positive deer and tested it. She discovered that while there was a correlation between the ear tissue testing positive and the tick testing positive, also the deer tissue, ear of the deer tissue, had higher amounts of prions correlated with the ticks and having higher numbers of prions as well. Took that information to determine that one infectious dose was tested with the prions. She determined that 3 deer heads had prions. 2 of them were over the infectious dose, over that 0.3 of a dose, meaning the infected wasn't infected yet because it was under dosage. It hadn't gotten it yet because it was 0.3 of a dose, not enough. And the other 2 were infected, it recorded at 6.9242 times the infectious dose. So what does it come down to? Essentially, ticks are just taking up the prions and inadvertently because they're taking a blood meal and they're acting as like a tic tac is what she refers to them as. And deer come along and eat them. If you had a tick engorged itself on CWD-positive deer, somehow found its way to a human and fed on the human, and unlikely any prions are getting transmitted from the tick to the human species. So, a lot's been learned. The important part, though, was trying to control that spread is where I think we're going to find ourselves having a little bit of a problem if you look at the rate in which that can happen within the deer. I think that's why it also, you look at the deer raising Deer Farms. Yep. Those are very prone to having that kind of thing done too.
So, sure.
But kind of a, that was kind of a cool deal in my mind. What do you guys think? I mean, have you ever seen, I mean, you've had ticks on you before, haven't you?
Of course.
And?
No, thank you.
You pull them off.
No heebie-jeebies? No.
I get the heebie-jeebies.
Do you?
Yeah, and it's always like you wake up in the middle of the night and you feel them.
Oh, they,
slowly.
They walk with overshoes on, you know. You can feel them walk right up your arm.
Ugh.
Or elsewhere.
Gross.
There you go. There he goes. Again.
See, and I've got the heebie-jeebies.
I told you would. Let's give you another heebie-jeebie. Minnesota DNR is calling an update to the plan for invasive carp.
Yeah,
they
want
to update.
And what's the update?
There's a lot of questions and what will happen with invasive carp in the state and some ideas on how they can address the Mississippi River and how that transit will occur. They want to gather everybody together at the table and have folks on the same page and examine values, not just the science of what's at issue. And it's definitely something that's traveling upriver right now. Pool 2 Pool 9 and 10 have got them. They're moving up.
You're talking Asian carp now.
Asian carp.
Yep.
Yep. And what they want to see is more of an action plan that's oriented toward prevention. Some of the things they're talked about in the first couple of meetings is make me worry that they're thinking about management and not prevention. Management and prevention are obviously two very different things. In most of Minnesota, prevention is still on the table, but only if we act right now. Once they get established, it's nothing you can do at that point. The value group will meet first in two or three meetings per month. There'll be additional homework to complete before the next meeting, and it'll be talking about various levels and methodologies to control that. And the Stop Carp Coalition is pushing for a bioacoustic fish fence at Lock and Dam 5, but $17 million proposal was not passed by legislators. Just wait till it actually ends up in their neighborhood and see what happens. So,
yep.
Not fun. In anybody's mind, it's not fun. And you know what? Those invasive carp, I've seen them and seen what they're capable of doing. And it's devastating. So, devastating was this show, man. I got to tell you, this was devastation.
Yeah,
all across the map, all across the Midwest. Thank you guys for joining us. I'm Eric for Ava, Don. We are the Valley Outdoors, and we are out of here. Have a great weekend, everybody.